and welcome to The Assembly Line, Dev Bytes. I'm your host, Kevin from K-Han Games, and I'm here to talk about homebrews and the people who help make them. So I had the good fortune of going to the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a couple months ago, 1 month, 2 months, who knows, time flies. And by the way, I guess I can't blame Bo anymore for how long it takes to get these episodes out. I apologize that it's been so long. I sent some feelers out to a few people that I really want to get on here. But I've kept getting these like really soft no's, like, yeah, I'd love to do it, but just don't have the time. It's like, you know what? Horseshit. This takes like an hour. You can make time. You just don't want to do it, you lazy bastards. Sorry, not angry at all about that. Anyway, when I was at MGC, a lot of developers were there. Some good friends that I've met numerous times and some people who I had never met before. One of which was Mr. Dale Koop, who we're going to be interviewing here today. I knew Dale, and by the way, his real name's not Dale Koop, that's a screen name, but one thing I love is that, obviously, that is a direct reference to the amazing show Twin Peaks that came out in 1990, and he and I share a love for that show. So we've always, you know, I haven't known much about him other than, you know, we share a love for Twin Peaks, and in that we share a love for coffee, and you know, he's always been super supportive about, you know, of me on Twitter and, you know, my tweets and retweeting and celebrating, you know, projects and things. So I've always had an affinity for him, but like never knew much about him as a person. So going there, he was there from France and I was stoked to meet him, but I honestly was not prepared for his story. Like he blew me away, both as a person and learning what he's been through as a human. So I knew I had to get him on here. So I asked him, you know, hey, you know, I know you're French. Like, do you feel comfortable? Like, would you feel comfortable coming on an English speaking podcast and like answering the hard hitting questions that I toss out? And luckily he was down. You know, I sent him some questions in writing just to, so he could get, you know, wrap his head around him ahead of time to formulate some good answers. And our talk went really well. So I can't thank him enough for being willing to come on here and talk. I mean, I know a tiny bit of French, but there's no way in hell I would feel comfortable going on a French podcast and giving, you know, answers that were worth a damn. So thank you, Dale. Our talk was amazing. You did great. And I very much look forward to other people hearing you and your story. You are an inspiration to us all. And honestly, aside from that, you are a great asset to this community. And I'm so glad that you found your way to us. And I just want to thank you personally. So without further ado, I will get the interview going. So thanks for tuning in, guys. And as always, hit me up if you have any comments. Other than, hey, do more episodes. I'm working on it, you know? All right, let's go. All right, I'm here with Dale Koop. How are you doing, Dale?
Hey, hello. Thank you for having me here. I'm very happy. Here it's 5 p.m. now and a sunny day today.
Good. So the weather's good in France?
Yeah, recently, yes. It's the warmy days are coming back, so we're very happy here.
How hot does it get there?
Oh, usually maybe 20, 25 degrees Celsius in May.
Ah, I forgot that you're going to tell me something in Celsius, which means nothing to me. All right, so let's talk about video games. Give me your earliest memory of video games in your life.
Oh, it was when I was a kid, as far as I can remember, it was when my father brought home the Atari 2600. I was maybe 3 or 4 years old. And my memory is still a bit blurry, but I remember pretty well the excitement of playing the games my dad bought that time. It was Miss Pac-Man and Centipede, Moon Patrol, and another one, Galaxian, yeah.
So your dad played video games? Did he continue to play video games, like, through the years?
He's not a player, but he likes playing some games, yeah. Nice. At that time, it was the Atari, because he liked arcade cabinet games. So it was very popular in France in the 80s, and so he was playing that when he was young. So he bought the Atari when I was young. And after that, he was not really interested in video games. He played a little with me, with my NES, of course, and the Game Boy too. But now he has a PlayStation 4 and VR. He likes
oh, no kidding.
VR games, so yeah, he's into that. But I don't have PlayStation 4 or 5.
Right.
I'm just, I'm more indie games or 8-bit games.
Yeah, so he's not into the retro stuff. Like, I imagine that for you and me, you know, looking back, a lot of nostalgia plays a part in that. But he, you know, being a little bit older, probably didn't have those same feelings.
He's more into the advanced games, the high technology. He thinks, wow, VR, it looks very cool. Yes, I want to try. So, yeah, but he's very supporting with my activity when I make games or with my son. He's very supporting us because he knows games, so he likes to remember that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned NES. When did the NES enter your life, and do you have any like special memories from that time?
Yes. In fact, my NES, it was maybe in the beginning of the 90s. I had friends, of course, and neighbors who had NES, so NES console. So I wanted one so badly, but, you know, my parents are not very rich, so we couldn't get consoles or video games as we wanted. So I had to wait until my birthday to get NES. So I got NES with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game, and I was very happy. Oh,
yeah.
And it was the first console, my own first console. So it's a very nostalgic, of course, but very important memory for me. So I remember, I really remember when I opened the wrapping discovered the NES. Yes, because I wanted that one. So it was, of course, it was not a surprise, but I was very happy. And I had a good friend of mine who had who was rich. He was the rich guy of the school, so he had every game. So I used to go to his place and play games with him. It was a very close friend. And when I got my NES, so we were talking about NES games always. So. He was lending me, I borrow some games from him, and we spent Wednesday afternoon and Sunday, Saturday together playing at his place or my place, because I had NES now. So it was very, it was very a nerdy thing to do together, yeah.
Are you still in contact with that friend? Is he still in your life?
No, sadly, yeah, no, We lost contact, very after maybe high school, I think. And I tried to find him again now with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. It's kind of easy to find again those people. So I found him on Facebook, and I'm following him, but I didn't make the step to contact him again to talk about that.
Right. So he doesn't know that you're making games right now?
Oh, no, I think he doesn't know, yeah.
Oh, man. I wonder, like, if some of my friends that I played NES games with back in the day, like, exactly. knew what we're doing now, like, what they would think.
Yeah, it would be awesome, yeah. I think, yeah, if you met again those kids, your friends, And now you're making games. Yeah, it would be amazing, I think.
So did you know, when you started playing NES, did you know right away that, like, this system is way better than the Atari? Like, this system is, the games are consuming me. Like, did you really, really love it?
Yeah, the games are... The game were very different. On the Atari, the game I had was like arcade games. It was a very quick play. You know, you have just about a scoring, so mm-hmm. you can play 5 minutes or 6 minutes. But with the NES, you had adventure games like Zelda, like even Mario, Super Mario Bros. 1, I mean. It was an adventure. It was very long. You can't play just 5 minutes. Oh, of course, if you're sucks at the game, you can play just 5 minutes. But I mean, when you're into the game, you play for hours. Yes, it was very different. You was inside the games at the time.
Right. So as you got older, and you know, did you keep playing NES or did you move to other game systems?
After the NES, I think like a lot of people of that generation, I sold my NES with the games, and I bought the new system, which was Super NES, SNES. Of course, it was the new thing. It was more big games, more advanced
prettier and
prettier,
bigger.
Longer, the music incredible. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, I wanted to do that. All my friends sold their name or sold their NES or just bought SNES. I was talking about that. So me too, I wanted to do that. So yeah, I sold my NES and some games. I bought them to, I sold them to you, to my cousin. So it's funny because I met my cousin last 2 years ago, and he told me, yes, I still have your NES in my place. Yes. And he bought some games from me, and he said, yeah, we'll play on your NES at home. So it's, it's funny. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, I regret selling my stuff as a
too.
Kid. So I love that you still know where yours is.
Yes, it's very cool because now I have NES at home. Of course, I have two NES here, but it's not my NES. So
right.
Sometimes, I'm very happy. I still know where is mine, but maybe one day.
Do you ever think about trading?
Back.
Like,
yeah,
get yours
maybe
back
I
and give him a different
one. Exactly. And also I got, I remember I bought, when I was a kid, I got the Game Boy, of course. The Game Boy was a big thing, yes. My parents loved the Game Boy, so they was playing often. So that was, it was very funny because we were doing like a challenge or like a competition between each other, like every night almost. It was very... Very
what games did they like playing?
Yeah, of
like
course,
Tetris?
Tetris, yes, of course. The only one. Maybe just that game was the reason they were playing to the Game Boy.
Yeah, it's amazing. I bet they sold so many more Game Boys just because it came with Tetris. Like everyone,
yes,
you didn't have to be
a
gamer to play Tetris.
Yeah. Oh, have you seen the movie on Apple TV, Tetris?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched that.
It's very
funny. Awesome.
Yeah.
So when did programming enter your life? When did you start learning about programming, and what was your first language?
Oh, programming. When I was young, I was interested in computers. So when I was in middle school, maybe I was in a computer club. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing stuff on computers after school, and a few of us were interested in programming. So we tried to understand. It was QBasic, I think. Yeah, QBasics,
okay.
And we tried to understand how to modify the source code of the games we had in the computer and trying to see what will happen if we change this number with this number or changing the name of the variable. It was like that the first time I tried. And but it was just a small activity. It was not very something I wanted to do, or I was really interested. In fact, it was just to be with friend and doing everything, anything.
Just something fun to do.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. We were also playing like a Doom or all the softwares on the CD-ROM at that time. Yes, just for play. And then, in fact, I did my studies in programming like a few years after that. So I changed my mind and I decided to, yes, maybe I can try that because the computer is very fun and maybe it will be more useful in the future. Maybe everyone will do something with a computer. So I decided to study programming. When I had 20 with my degree, I had no difficulty to find a job in programming. So, I started working in companies doing programming, like a small web and HTML, JavaScript, PHP.
Did you know right away that you were good at programming, like that you understood and picked up on things quickly? Did you take to it?
Not really, no. It was programming is not very easy. I was not good at school, in fact. So I did my studies, but it was a really difficult school period. In fact, I was not going to every lesson and class, or I just was skipping days. I went doing something else with friends, or just playing on PCs instead of following the lessons.
The lessons,
of course,
yeah.
I was not good at that. I think it's when I finished my studies and when I started to work in the companies, at that moment, in fact, I was more interested in the code, and I realized maybe because I was seeing the result of my work directly with the customers, the clients, or the company itself. At that moment, I understood, this is what I do. In fact, yeah, when I code, it's for that, and it's interesting. And at that moment, I really was into that. So I was following tutorials. I had, of course, formations, training for that, paid by my company, and I got books about C++ and Delphi, because now I'm coding in Delphi. It's a Pascal object language.
Yeah. So you didn't do any game development during this time. Like, when did you start becoming interested in game development?
Oh, yeah. At that moment, I was not really into gaming. When I became an adult, I lost my interest in games. In fact, it was not a lost thing, but it was just I had more things, important things to do.
Yeah, higher priorities.
Instead of, just being with friends, spending time, or I was really into movies, so I went to a lot of theaters to watch movies and reading about that. So games were no more hobby, so I was not anymore interested in games. But I was still following what's going on, consoles or new games. So just because some of my friends were gamers, so sometimes I was talking about games. And one day, when I was in that computer club when I was younger, some games in the club, some people in the club were making games at that time. So they were making a small game in Basic, I think, or QBasic. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that moment, but I remember that time they I joined them to make their game. So I was doing the graphics at that time because I was not into coding. But it was already a small project. They were doing that for maybe a project school. I don't remember because we were not in the same classroom. But just remember, it was the first time I was making something in a game. But it was just graphics. But I was with them, so talking with them, spending hours with them. I was checking. Yes, what's going on the code and how to do that? What tool we need and everything. But it was just, like I said earlier, it was just for when I was in school. So it was way earlier before I did my studies and I wanted to make the company working. And after that, so when I was, so after I was more into movies and gaming came back very later, when I was maybe 30 years old. I started again to play, so I bought maybe the Wii or PSP before. Yeah, but the PSP, the Wii. So I came back slowly into gaming. But at that time, I didn't know games were being made, in fact. That part of the gaming, I mean the homebrew scene, like we all know now, that was really, really recently I discovered.
So how did you hear that there were new NES games being made today?
Yeah, so in 2017, so a few years ago, I got sick. I discovered I had a cancer, so I went to surgery and I had a chemo for several months. And I was, like I said, very sick and very weak. I spent all my time in my bed, lying in my bed for a month. Wow. So it was not a good moment in my life, but I had my family, so my wife and my kid with me. They were supporting me, of course, all my friends and my family. But in that moment, in fact, you don't. People who haven't experienced that maybe doesn't know, but when you're inside that process, you don't feel the love of people, or you don't want, in fact, people. With people getting interested in you, you just want to be alone, in fact.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult moment. And at that time, so I was in my bed after a lot of weeks with nothing to do and depressed. I was depressed, in fact. And I was checking, I was starting watching things on YouTube and like anything, in fact, just something to get my my mind
something to focus
escaping
on.
From the reality of my life. And I found, I don't remember how, but a video about new games for the NES. So I was first I was not really interested, but just watching the video was some people still making games for the NES. So I just remember at that time that, when I was a kid, I was loving my NES. So, yeah, it's really cool they're still doing that. And so YouTube just shows me more and more video about that, about NES games, homebrew scene. So at that moment, at that time, I discovered what is the homebrew scene, the NES homebrew scene, and I started to go on everywhere I could read about that and watch about that. So YouTube and the forums and some websites. And I had so much time to do anything or everything when I was in my bed. So I was just exploring everything. And it's at that moment I started to play, try some of the homebrews. And yes, homebrew was shared on the forum, I think. I don't remember which one I started first, but I remember some of the games. Yes, it was fun. And I started to follow the podcast at that moment. Yes, the Assembly Line podcast. Yeah, I remember.
Nice. So even at this point, you were checking out homebrews and playing them, but you still weren't thinking like I want to learn how to make them myself.
No, not at that time. I was so weak, so I was really not motivated to do anything.
Yeah.
I was just enjoying the reading about that and watching videos about that. There were not a lot of videos, but some gameplay or foot like that. And it was already interesting. So even that was exciting for me because it was really fresh, and I was like escaping from my day. So, and one day, I mean, it was maybe end of 2017. Yes, I watched the movie. The new 8-bit heroes.
Oh yeah,
by Joe Granato.
By Joe Granato.
Yeah, exactly. And that video changed everything because when I saw that, when I watched that movie, I discovered first the story about Joe Granato and his game, because the movie is about, it's a documentary about how Joe Granato tried to make his NES game. This childhood NES game. So now with all the knowledge he has, he wants to make that game. So it's a lot of, it's 2 hours maybe, 2 hours documentary about how he tried to make that game and mm-hmm. all the step he, and the problem he had to do that. And the game is Mystic Searches. And at the end, around the end of the movie, we discovered the tool he made while he was creating his game. He had to make tools for that, and mm-hmm. Finally he created NES Maker. So it's a tool to make NES games, even if it's not really that, but to help making NES games. And that one changed everything because, when I watched the documentary, I discovered, in fact, everyone can make NES games. Mm-hmm. It was my first statement. So I think, maybe I could try too, but I need to more think about that before I start something. And in fact, I tried the tutorials, Nerdy Nights by Bunny Boy. And how to say, it was really complicated for me, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I think I quit after the second lesson or something like that. Yeah. It's because it's about a lot of assembly language, and it's really not...
it doesn't hold your hand.
Yeah, exactly. We could say that, yes. Yes, it's really too... For me, it was too abstract and very mm-hmm. complicated. So, no, I couldn't follow those tutorials, so I gave up. But after... discovered the NES Maker, so I thought, maybe I could try again something. I could try with the tool or with tools like that. I mean, because the NES Maker is really, it's really visual. So you click and you draw with your mouse, and you have a lot of properties to to set up, and everything is like a modern UI development tool. So it's really things like I know because I work like that. So I thought maybe it's easier to it's an easier approach to make the developments of NES games. So in fact, yeah, like in 2018, yeah, of course, beginning of 2018. I started to search every information about how to create NES games myself because I wanted to try. So Bunny Boy tutorials were too difficult for me. So I was looking on forums and on websites. I discovered there is a you can code in C too, like with Nestlib, but. I'm not very good in C, so and at that time I thought NES games with C are very slow and it's difficult to be to optimize for games. So I didn't went that road. So I finally decided to wait the Nest Maker tool. So I backed the Kickstarter for the. For the NES Maker, and I waited the beta versions. It was in 2018, maybe I don't remember August, maybe I think July or August, I don't remember. And at that time, I started with NES Maker, and NES Maker, like I said, it's visual, but every source code is attached to the project, and it's assembly, so. You can modify anything, and you can try to set up or modify the basics engine to do things you want. Of course, at that time it was not very easy because, like I said, the assembly is not my cup of coffee, and Joe Gonato, who made NES Maker, of course, there is tutorials for the UI, how to use the UI, how to set up your projects to make your first NES games. So you create small graphics, you can set up your objects, like your character, what will be the properties. So you can set health, you can set defense, you can set the speed of movement, bounding box, collision box, and everything. You can do the same for monsters or NPC, and you can assign movement, or you can assign AI for your monsters. And then in Nest Maker you have a level editor, so you can build your levels, your screens. And to the project you have all the source code is attached to the project, so you can easily modify every script. And Joe made some tutorials about how to program in assembly, but for an NES Maker.
For an NES Maker.
So so it tries to explain the basic assembly operation or opcode you can use, and what it means in the context of NES Maker. So. When he explains that, he uses the variables of NES Maker and some situation in NES Maker, so you can easily understand what you modify and what the effect is in the project in your game.
Yeah, so you have way better context and understanding what the code is actually doing.
Yes, and I think it's. Because it's visual and you can instantly see the results of your modification, it really helps to understand what you're doing, in fact. Oh, of course, it's not obvious, but you easily understand, or you can easily understand with time when you do that often and often. So I watched the tutorials like, 20 times
Yeah.
So, yeah, I spend a lot of time, a lot of weeks doing that because I have nothing to do except that. So, yeah, it was really something I wanted to do because it was interesting and it was creative even. And those tutorials were really helpful. And at that moment, one day, maybe I was already using the tool for maybe 2 months or 3 months. And one day, I understood what I was writing and what I was reading.
Yeah, something clicked in your brain.
Yes, exactly. Something clicked. And at that moment, I understood, okay. I understand what is those, what means yeah, LDA.
That's a good day.
Yes. That was really a good day because after that, when you understand what's going on and what's all means, you can start writing your own routines and build your algorithms. You can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, it's still in the context of the Nestmaker engine, but it's really a big step in my progress in my NES homebrew moments. I think.
So when you started messing with NES Maker, did you immediately start working on your first game, or did you figure out the tool and then, you know, a few months later decide, okay, now I'm going to start a first full project?
Yeah, it was more like that. Yes, I was first. I was just making small like the tutorial. So I was just watching again tutorials, making something. Then I was trying to modify the code and see what's going on, and try to implement something like a new feature or because I think I already said, but Nestmaker comes with a basic game engine,
mm-hmm.
but all the source are editable. You can modify everything, so you can remove some parts. You can add your own script, your own routines, and you can remove the entire engine and write your own. So I was trying to remove some stuff and adding new things and see what's going on. And I did that for a long time. Yes, I made small projects what I could do. Maybe I could do a smaller platform or game. Because Nestmaker, when it was in a beta, it came with very limited things. Like you had just top down, you could make only top down adventure game.
Yeah, and, the only one module or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, yes, because in Nestmaker, yeah, it's a module. So at first, it was only the top-down adventure one. And
because that's what their game is, Mystic
exactly.
Searches.
Mystic yeah, Searches makes sense. Is that, yes, like a classic Zelda game, yeah. And it's very fun. You can do a lot of things already. So it's already for something for someone like me, it's already incredible because with Nestmaker you can build your small game and you can play it like in one click and it compiles the game and it's open in the emulator and you can play directly what you build. So it's really an incredible feeling playing your own games, in fact.
Yeah.
And and after that, so I started to change that to see if I could add more things like adding the gravity. Because Nestmaker came with only the adventure module, but he had some extra scripts in the folder. Some of the scripts had gravity handling. So at that time I saw. Those scripts, and I see, and I understood Joe wanted to make more modules, like platformer modules, and maybe other modules will come. So I just started to watch and read all the scripts he already prepared prepared and of course not included in the default module, but it was already here with the software. So I started to take some code and combine with other scripts to make a platformer screen, smaller Super Mario Bros. Like a Mario Bros. Maybe more like a platformer, but a one screen, single screen one.
Right.
And it was already fun. Yes, it was with the beta. So I made like that small project just to play with the code, and it was fascinating. Yes, I was really enjoying that.
So was your first game, was it Kubo?
Yeah, Kubo is my son's game. Yes, Kubo. It was my son. His name is Seiji. Seiji was he was 5 years old at that time, and after school, when he was coming back from school, he was seated next to me when I was in my bed playing. Mm-hmm. Making those games, following the tutorials.
So you're still sick and going through chemo at this point?
Chemo was already finished, but after chemo, I needed to get back my strength because the chemo was so strong with me. I lost more than 20 kilograms in 1 week.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't walk anymore, so I had to stay in my bed and yes, and get back my strength. So I have to eat special food or high energy something or high protein something. Yeah, it was not a good. Luckily, I was no more depressed at that time. Because now I had motivation with the NES games, making NES games was very motivating for me. So it helped to get motivation and just doing something. Yeah, it was, I think, doing something creative or to not be not staying at home doing nothing. So yes, I was in my bed, but I could work, so I could go to another room of my place. But my main PC setup was in my room, so I use a Mac, so MacBooks. I was with my MacBook on lying on my bed and playing NES with NES Maker. And my son, yes, was watching me doing all that for 4 days or after school or during the weekend. He was watching me. And one day he asked me, Daddy, I would like to make an NES game, me too. So
oh, wow.
I said, oh, wow, yeah. That we could try something. Yes, we could. We have time. We could try that.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to... to make small workstation together, like let's create a small NES game together. So it was just maybe 1 hour in the weekend, maybe on Saturday or Sunday, it depends. And I was just doing that, how to make an NES game, what is an NES game, what is the limitation of the console, and what is a limitation of the tool, and so we were very specific. First, we started with the graphics, so we started to talk about what kind of games he would like to make, and of course we were limited by the tools. So it could only be a top down adventure game because NES Maker at that time only do that, but It was nice because he liked Zelda, so we started with that. Then what kind of character he would like to do? So he started to draw on paper, and then we went to the PC. So he was drawing in pixels in NES Maker in the pixel editor tool. So he was redrawing his characters, and then. We started to make screens, what is screens, what is tiles, the limitations, the attributes, the collisions. We did all of that. It took a long time, maybe 2 or 3 months, because we did a small sessions. After the end of the summer of 2018, we finished his first prototype. It was a game, Kubo. Yes, it's a turtle cowboy who has to find a crystal hidden somewhere. And of course, there is a monster on the map, so it was very fun. It was my first game too, because before that I haven't made anything except my small prototypes of modifying codes like that. So it was fun to make that game with him. So we made it's a really short game. It's just adventure game with maybe 5 or 6 screens maybe. Mm-hmm. So you just need to move around and get a key to open the door and then to beat the small monsters and access to the cave where there is the crystal. And then the game is finished. You have a title screen, an ending screen, and game over screen. So it's a small game.
He was 5 years old. This was 2018.
When we finished the game, he was 6 years old, yes.
And, okay. So
it was really fun.
It's now 5 years later, and you've done Kubo 2 and Kubo 3, right? Is he still just as interested in... I mean, essentially, it's been half his life now. He's been working on these games with you. Like, is he still enjoying it just as much as he was when he was 5 and 6?
Now he's 10, so it's a little different. He's he's really interested in creating games in general, and not NES specifically now.
Oh, so he's looking to move on to more modern things?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow,
yes.
That's incredible.
Yes, he's now he's following the tutorials to make make games in with Unity and with tools like that. So Blender, he's checking Blender.
Oh, wow.
And coding in C# and everything. It's a little difficult for him. I told him, it's okay, you have time. Do what you want, what you like, it's okay.
So how does that make you feel to see him taking something that you guys shared together and like it becoming a main interest in his life?
Yeah,
it has to be special.
Oh yeah, it's very special. And another moment before that, when he finished Kubo 3, because Kubo 3 is his first complete NES game, it's a full NES game. It's a game he made in 2020, and it's a full game. So you have four levels. It's a mix between the top down and the platformer screens. You have bosses, four bosses, and the final boss with the final stage. And that game was his first long process game. So we made it in 1 year, in fact. Before that, he made Kubo 1 and Kubo 2, who were a very small game, like prototypes, or just to training him, just to learn the tools, to learn the limitation. We were working together at that time, but with Kubo 3, he had more. He could do more things alone. I mean, I was just because it was already 2 years after, so he has a lot of experience already. So he already
knew the
limitation.
Were there a lot of features added to NES Maker during this time also?
Oh yes. At that time, NES Maker, the final versions were already out, so there was already more modules. There was adventure. There was platformer and a lot of new modules. So we decided to mix some modules to get more feature in his game, because he wanted something like a Zelda 2, like a top-down map. You can you can discover a secret or something, and each levels will be a platformer levels. So we mixed a lot of scripts, and we had to we modified the physics to add, for example, for the water levels. We have some waters we have some levels where you are in swimming in the water. Mm-hmm. And so we had to change the the gravity, and of course we had to implement a lot of things for the bosses, like AI specific attacks and projectiles and collision things, because the Nestmaker comes with a lot of basic things, but it's nice to make prototypes or to or for educational purposes, like I do. I mean, it's Nestmaker is a great tool to work with people, just to make small projects. And if you want to make an NES game, you will have to code things inside Nestmaker to add your own features. Mm-hmm. For your game. It's not made. Nestmaker, NES Maker is not made to for a full game. You can just make small demos or prototypes, but it's enough for having fun. But so for Kubo 3, we added a lot of things. Yeah, and it's the reason it took 1 year. It's because Seiji wanted specific things, so I have to code, mm-hmm. Write the code, and then add that in Nestmaker so he can use for his project.
Wow. So when you're working on Kubo 3, you got pretty good at assembly because you're having to essentially create all this stuff.
I was not very good, but I was better than I was 2 years earlier, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working like a few sessions during weekends or holidays. So it's also the reason why it took 1 year. And Kubo 3 went physically, so we made a physical edition, NES, and for Famicom 2 we made, so the game, it's his first game which were outside of our home, in fact. So some players all around the world bought the game and was playing it. Mm-hmm. So he received a lot of feedback, so that was really, really interesting and important for him. Now he realized his game is not the game are not for himself only. So
yeah,
it can interest some other people too.
Was it hard? I mean, I know that trying to, because I have friends that say, "Hey, I want to do a game with you," and then I'm like trying to explain. Okay. The limitations of the system to them, and it's hard for them to understand as adults. Like, I can't even imagine how hard it would be to explain the NES's limitations to a child that age, that he doesn't have any context. Like, he grew up with modern games. Was it hard for him to grasp the limitations of the system?
Yes. At the beginning, it's the reason we went progressively. And when we started working together, we first had this moment, when he needed to understand the color limitation, the sprite limitation, all the specific limitation for the NES. Yes, you can use only three color plus one here, and you can only use a 4-shade palette for your screen. All that, at first it was really difficult for him, but it's the reason we went progressively. So we did a small session, like maybe every week, one hour about one particular topic. So it was sprite and colors, and we did that. And after months and years, because 2 years after that, yes, he understood. it's not perfect. Sometimes he made more colors or too big. The objects was too big, so some sprite was not drawn anymore when he, with 8 sprite limitation. But he learned all of that with time. In fact, yeah.
What do his friends think about the fact that he's making games?
He doesn't talk about that to his friend. In fact, just his close friend, maybe 2 or 3 friends knows about that.
Wow!
But else he doesn't talk because it's not for him. It's not really a big thing. It's just an activity. So,
right.
Yeah, but. His friends first doesn't believe him, so yeah. So it's when they came here, or they can see.
It exists.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So when you're working on Kubo 1, Kubo 2, Kubo 3, yeah. Like other people are also messing with the NES Maker software. Mm. There's a forum set up for the community. A lot of people are posting the stuff they're working on. And they're running into issues getting their stuff working. Like, when did you realize you could help other people, fix their bugs and help them finish their projects?
When I came into the NES community, when the tool came out, they built a forum. And I joined the forum at that time. It was in 2018. And there were only a few members in the forum, a few members in the community, because the software was in beta, so there were not a lot of users at that time. And at that time, I knew nothing like everyone else. Well, a few members were more good in coding than me at that time. So I learned from them, and one day when I become more at ease with assembly code, and when I was making my own routines and my own code and for NES Maker, I was writing some tutorials on the forum, and more the software. Was growing, so after that when it was released, a lot of new users came into the community and into the forum. So they learned from us, from the people who were before them. Mm-hmm. So every forum, I think there is a lot of people asking help or have some issues, and because I already had those issues months
you've
before
been through
them,
it yourself.
So yes, I could help them on that. So I just started to help. I mentioned earlier, I had time at that moment, so I could help a lot of them, and the more I was helping, the more the community was growing, and a lot of people became friends. And then NES Maker made the competition. They do that every year now. It's the Byte of competition. It's you have 1 month to make NES game, a small NES game with the tool, donc NES game, and you can work alone, or you can work with you can make a team for that. Just it needs to be made in 1 month, and you need to use NES Maker to do that. So a lot of users started to make their own small games, or teamed with other users to make a small game for the competition. It was in 2019, so the first Byte of competition. And at that time, so I helped some of them for the game, because they wanted help, and it was very a short period, so a lot of people asked help in the same time. So I helped some of them. Some of them helped me because I may be good at coding, but I really know nothing about music or graphics. So
right.
I had to ask help for that. I asked help for music. I needed someone to make music. And at that time, Cut Across helped me. It's a good composer and a good coder too. I just was in working or helping some people. So on a project, different projects like that. And it was the beginning of those collaboration I do now.
That's awesome. So how many projects would you say you have going right now? Because I've seen a lot of NES Maker stuff, and it seems like your name is attached to almost all of them.
Sincerely, I don't know, to be honest.
A lot.
I just help when people ask for help, so I don't... sometimes I'm doing more than just helping. Sometimes I joined the team to make a real collaboration when the mm-hmm. when the project is really interesting and when they really need someone to do the code for them in the team, because NES Maker is a really good tool to gather a lot of different people, like a composer, a music composer, and artist, graphic artist, and some developers, of course, coding too. So graphic artist can make a small game without any code. In fact, NES Maker can you can make a small demo or prototype with your graphics. So they can make a small games. And sometimes after that, when they finish their prototypes, they think maybe I could extend that project to make a real NES mm-hmm. game. So at that moment, you need to add features and debug everything, fix all the bugs on the tool project. And at that moment, they ask me or another people from the forum or the Discord. Now we have a Discord too. And yes, I don't know how many people or projects I help, but I just remember the one I was a part of the team because those ones are the most memorable for me or mm-hmm. most important, yes.
Yeah, for the longest time, I was just doing games by myself. But once I started collaborating with some other people, like I feel like the same as you, like that's when it became the most special and the most memorable.
Yeah, it changes everything. In fact, when you work alone, it's fun, but it's very different. When you work with people, it's more, you have more ideas because they mm-hmm. give ideas, everyone gives ideas. And
and the ideas are better. Yeah, exactly. So were there any bugs that you weren't able to fix? Are there any bugs that just too complicated?
Yeah, still, yes. I'm still learning every day when I work in NES Maker. So there is a lot of still, because NES Maker is a great tool, but the engine is made by Joe Granato, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of bugs, in fact, but it's not a big problem when you follow the tutorials or when you make demos, prototypes. It's not really problematic, but when you want to make a game, you need to fix a lot of those bugs. So I spend most of my time, a lot of times trying to fix the bugs I discovered or that is problematic for the project. Mm-hmm. And some bugs I can fix, but there are still a few bugs I still have problem with, yes. usually it's caused by the scrolling or something like that, yes.
Because it's not pretty complicated, yes, too.
Yeah, and when you work on something you haven't written, it's very difficult to find where could be the bugs. You need to really dig into the code, try to understand why this is written, or why it does like that, because it's not you haven't imagined about that. So it's made by someone else. So you need to get that into. It's not easy.
Yeah, I never even considered that. Like it's hard enough for me to fix the bugs in my own code. I can't even imagine trying to look at someone else's code and try to understand what it's doing.
Yes, it's some days it's a nightmare. Yeah, so I sometimes I just remove a big part of the code.
Yeah,
I remove
see what
it,
happens.
And I write my own. Yeah, it's easier. like I did for after Cubo 3, the game with my son. My son made another game after that. He made a Skate Cat. Skate Cat is a skateboarding cat. It's a platformer game. He finished that game 2 months ago. Yes, 2 or 3 months ago. Recently, I mean. So we made a physical edition too. And besides that, I worked on my own NES game. It's a 4 players NES game, Chibi Monster Ball. It's just a small fighting game on arena, one screen, single screen arena. So you have 4 players. You can play until 4 players. I mean, and you have you have 60 seconds to fight each other and get the high score to be the winner.
Nice.
So for that. NES Maker doesn't support 4 controllers. The current version only supports 2 controllers, so 2 players. So I had to remove all the input controller reading stuff and all the things, all the code were handling the inputs, and I had to rewrite that to support the 4 controllers and 4 players. So it was quite challenging because you need to optimize a lot of things because NES Maker, the engine is quite heavy because it needs to be versatile. So it needs to work with a lot of...
it has to support so many things.
Exactly. So everything is written with a lot of... conditions in the code, so I had to remove a lot of stuff to optimize for 4 players because 4 players need a lot of controls, a lot of tile collision and object collisions. It's a lot of calculations. So I had to remove a lot of stuff to add my own code and another problem is because NES Maker is a engine is really big and heavy. And it takes a lot of space in the ROM, so I have to move a lot of things in another banks. I mean, to reorganize the code to be able to add my own code into that.
So at this point, you're removing and modifying so much stuff. Like, have you ever considered just moving outside of NES Maker and hard coding stuff, or are you so ingrained in the community now that you are just going to continue to use it?
A good question. Yeah. Sometimes I think about that. Yes, I could try again. Maybe Bunny Boy's tutorials and finish the tutorials and be able to start my own NES games from scratch. But I'm still afraid of doing that because I think it will take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And now I don't have a lot of time because I'm working again.
Back at work,
so
yeah.
I have my work, my family, everything. So I don't have a lot of free time, and I'm scared of about coding from scratch a game. And
because it would be almost like starting over.
Yeah, it's like starting over. So, but I had experience and knowledge I got from NES Maker. So maybe it will be maybe easier than when I tried the first time. But another thing is what you already said. It's now I am involved in the NES community, so I don't want to be too far from the. I mean, I don't want to go far away from the community.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, because I like those people and I like working with the NES maker, and so it's.
Quite, and I'm sure a lot of those people have become like really good friends in your life.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I could talk about Jordan Davis, Raftronaut, who made the music for my games. So he made the music for Cubo 3 and Skate Cat and some other games. And he's a really close friend now. I met him in 2018 when he was making his game, Space Raft.
Space Raft,
for, yeah. So it's an NES game. He made the first demo from for the Bite Off competition in 2019, and he asked me help for fixing the bugs. So I helped him, and then I asked him a collaboration for the music for my games, and then I worked with him again for different projects, his games, my games. So now we work together always. We have always games and projects together. So every day we're talking together since. So he's really a good friend now. And the more the community is growing, the more I made contact with people and friends. So I was invited in the USA in 2020 to meet some of them, like Artix, who made Dungeons and Knights. I worked on the game. I made the code for the game. And so I was invited there. I met Artix and some other development people. And yes, everyone is a friend. Like, I talk with them every day. I went to Milwaukee a few months ago.
Yeah, that's to, when I met you.
Yes, exactly. We met at last for the first time. I was very happy to meet you. And and everyone, in fact, because I never met those NES devs. But at MGC, I met everyone so far. Not everyone, but a lot of us. And it was really a good moment. So I met Jordan for the first time, too, because until then, we were only talking by Discord or Messenger.
Oh, wow.
Never and face-to-face, so it was very, very memorable moment for me to meet everyone.
Yeah, I bet you didn't know. I bet you didn't know when you came across the YouTube video talking about NES homebrews back in 2017. I bet you had no idea how much it would change your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, at that time, yes, I was just watching those videos about those guys who were making NES games. I was listening to a podcast made by you about talking about NES games and NES devs, and I was really not imagining one day I will meet everyone and and be a part of this community. Yes, but. Yes, it's already, I'm really, it's mind-blowing. I'm still not realizing that, it's very incredible for me. It makes me so happy now, yes. At that time, I was so depressed, but now it changed my life, yes.
Yeah, for sure. So you were one of the first NES homebrewers to have a game published by Limited Run Games. How was it working with them?
Oh yes, for Cubo 3. Yes, Cubo 3 was my son's first game, like I explained. Last year, Cubo 3 was published by Limited Run Games. So Seiji and I was really pleasantly surprised by this collaboration. I think I contacted them a few months before that, or the year before that. And they was very moved by our story, and they decided to publish the game. Yes, because they wanted to help help us, and decided to help the NES Homebrew scene in general. I think it was a change for them, something they wanted to do now. Say more NES games.
Yeah.
So they realized. There is something about that. People are interested in those new games, so they wanted to help us, and we are very very happy because Unlimited Run Games has a great visibility and
big following.
Having having a game published by them, it really help to grow the audience to show the games to a larger public, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And working with them was quite straightforward. We just exchanged some emails. They wanted some assets, so I prepared assets for the game. I sent to them, and the music, they wanted music, some videos. And they sent back some proposals for the visuals and... like that, it was really just emails by emails. But working with them, you need to be very patient because each exchange takes several days or weeks before having the reply. So it's really stressful.
So but how did you even know that you could reach out to them? Like, did someone bridge that relationship for you?
I don't remember. At that time, a lot of people was reaching out with me. I don't know why, but so I started to... I contacted them. I remember I sent them a message because I received a message from... one of the team or an email, I don't remember. My memory is quite blurry because of the chemo.
You're going through a lot.
My chemo got me some issues with my memory, so I can't remember. Sometimes I can't find my words. In fact, so it's a blurry. But I remember I contacted them because I received an email or a tweet message from them. One of them team, and so I replied to say to introduce myself and introduce my the games I work on, so Cubo 3 and some other project I was working on at that time, and like a few days after I received a message from them, and then it went quite fast, quickly. The first message is like interested in more information, more details about the story, about it was a good conversation. And after that, I received a contract, and after that, it was more a slow process.
Is that relationship continuing? Are you planning on working with them in the future, or are you allowed to say?
I can say I still have contact with them. I talk with them often about different things, projects, collaboration, ideas. I think we have a good relationship, so I can easily contact them, and I received quite easily now the reply. So some people asked me to get contact with them because they want their games published by Unlimited Run Games. So I have a privileged relationship, but now I can easily introduce people together. So maybe I will have some future project published by them. I don't know yet. It's still in the talkings.
So with you now being back to work, you know, you have a family, you have a job. How often are you able to work on your NES stuff?
I think like most of us, we all have, we are all, everyone is like me or you. I mean, we have, we are 40 years old, a family, a life, a cat, a dog.
Yeah.
A lot of distractions. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So working on an NES game is became difficult. Yeah, me personally, I work almost every day, but it's just a few minutes, like 30 minutes or maximum 1 hour. But depends of the day, depends of the motivation. But I usually work. A little on NES every day. And I do that since the beginning, I mean, since 2018. So it's a long, long time, yeah.
Do you see yourself doing this, you know, until the end of time, or do you think you'll move on to something else?
I don't know yet, but I still have a lot of ideas or a project I would like to do, so... I'm just having issues because I don't have enough time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
you still love it?
Yeah, I still love it. Yes, I still love it. Sometimes I get frustrated or hungry, because of some code I can't figure out how to write, or some bugs I can't fix, and it really makes me. Want to stop or quit or make a break, and but after 1 day or 2 days, I come back and I continue, and I think I will do that. I will keep doing that for more years. There is still some other system I would like to do, like a Game Boy or a Super NES after that, but not now. I'm not, I still have a lot of projects, NES projects I want to make. I have written somewhere and I want to start, but I don't have time to do that. So I focus, I stay focused on my current NES projects, and we'll see after that.
Are there any of those future projects that you want to talk about now to you know, give people a little taste of?
Yeah. Last week I was finishing Skate Cat for the Famicom edition. So Skate Cat is the game of my son.
I got to play that the NES, at MGC. It's very fun.
Exactly, yes. For MGC, we had the NES version, the edition. And we make a Famicom edition, so in Japanese. The translation is made by my wife, who is Japanese.
Oh, no kidding.
And so it's a family business now. it's quite fun. And it's fun, and it's sometimes difficult to work with someone close. In fact, working with my son or with my wife, sometimes we had some tensions, difficulties, like we don't have the same ideas or not the same. We are not always agreeing. So, and Seiji, my son, is really a strong character. So, opinion. So. Yes, when he thinks something, it's very difficult to change his mind. So, we're making the Famicom edition. Every physical edition we made, we work with Brock Studio.
Yep.
So it's a company in France who.
Yeah, I love him. Antoine's great.
Yeah, he's a coder, and so he made Twin Dragons and Super. Base Def Adventure, and he's publishing a lot of NES games for different NES developers, and he helps people like me who wants an NES physical edition to he just manufacture it for me, in fact. So we said for example for Skate Cat Famicom, we said we want 200 copies, so he's making 200 copies of Famicom in box and sealed.
That's great. So
we're waiting for that. He's manufacturing that right now. It should be ready for this summer, maybe next month or July, I don't know yet. But it's very cool because not everything, but a lot of those boxes will be sent to Japan. We have
No kidding.
I have some relation with some stores in Tokyo, and the game will be there for sale in the stores. It's very very interesting, very exciting moment. We did that with Cubo 3 too, and it sold well there. A lot of people were very interested in the games.
Yeah, I've heard there's still a pretty good demand for Famicom stuff. Like, it's not uncommon to see them in stores in Japan.
Yeah, still. We don't hear often about the Famicom homebrew community, but they're still very, very active there. And so a lot of people playing Famicom games there, and they love that. And but we don't hear. Maybe we are too far from mm-hmm. them. I don't know, but it's sad. But we just finished that, and I have another project with Jordan Davis, Raftronaut. It's an ES project. We work together. I can't say more information about that because it's on hold now. We're waiting to finish first his Sword project.
Yeah, he's working on Storied Sword.
Yeah, with Nathan, yes. Mm-hmm. He's working on that. So after that, we'll work together on our project. On my side, I'm still working on my Chibi Monster Brawl, so the four-player NES game. Mm-hmm. It's a small game. It's a personal game, so I don't work often on it. I just work once a month, or just to add some features or fixing some bugs. And I don't have a plan for that. It's just
no time frame.
A small project I work on sometimes, just to bring on conventions in France or in USA maybe next year. Just to show and to play with people. I don't have plan for publishing or anything yet, maybe. And I also do a collaboration with Nape Games. It's a Spanish studio who makes NES games. Mm-hmm. They are working on a new game, and I'm helping on the code. I don't know when this game will be released, but I think it's this year. And after that, I have another project who was not started yet. It's for another company, another studio. I am working with them, and there is a project, but I have no news from now, so just wait, maybe next year. I don't know, over this year, but not now, so maybe in some months.
Wow, you have a lot going
on. Usually it's 3-4 projects at the same time, and I do a rotation. So I work on one project one day, or 2 days in a row, and then I work on another project, and I do that every day or every two days.
I'm sure that keeps it interesting. You're never bored.
Yes, exactly. Because each project is really different. So it's really refreshing each time I work on one of the projects. It's really motivating. And it's really fun because I like exchanging, talking with people about their projects, what they want to do, mm-hmm. or what their ideas are. What can we do with that? And it's very fun.
That's awesome.
But you know that you already worked with some people yourself.
Yeah. So Where can people find you if they want to follow your progress?
Oh, I'm usually on Twitter, so Twitter Delcoop, and it's my main place, I think.
Okay.
Or they can find me on Discord too, and on the NESmaker forum too. Yeah.
Well, I will say it's been incredible meeting you and learning your story. You're a great addition to this community. We're lucky to have you. Me having a small part in bringing you into it when you found the podcast, I'm honored to know you and to call you a friend. And I can't wait to hang out with you again in the future.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yes, I hope I can be back to MGC and next year. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I was very very happy and honored to be here because, like I said, I was listening to the podcast since the beginning. So I was really I love that podcast. I think it's my favorite podcast in the. I listen a lot of podcasts.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm very addict to podcasts. And it's very cool, yes. I'm very happy to be here. And yes, I hope I can meet you and more and everyone next year at NGC or maybe another convention. I don't know. We will see. But,
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you to everyone, too. Yeah, thank you, everyone, to listening and... I hope the NESmaker and the NES dev communities will meet together again because it was fun at MGC.
Yeah, super fun.
To be everyone together.
Well, is there anything else you want to say before we end this?
I don't think anything, but thank you, everyone. And we'll see soon, I think.
Awesome.
Merci.
All right, that's all we got for this episode. I appreciate you guys tuning in and sticking through the whole thing. As always, you can find me on Twitter at A Ton of Glaciers. If you guys want to go follow the great Dale Coop, you can find him on Twitter at Dale_Coop, and I highly recommend you do so. He's just doing some really cool stuff, and it seems like he's going to be around a while, so no time like the present to get in there and see what he's doing. Many thanks to The Human Thomas for the Dev Bytes version of our theme song. As always, if you want to send any feedback or ask any questions about the podcast, you can contact me at nesassemblyline@gmail.com, and I will answer your question in a future episode. And until next time, I'm going to keep bugging people to get on here, so hopefully I'll get a yes. And we can keep this thing going. All right. We'll see you next time. Thank you.